Welcome to the deep dive. We take that stack of sources, you've got notes, research, maybe just a pile of bookmarks, and we really drill down to find the core knowledge you need. Today, wow, we've got a really intense one. A high fantasy saga, huge scale. We're talking demonic overlords, mechanical armies, and this desperate quest. Resurrection is on the line.
Yeah, it's quite the setup. We're diving deep into some really harsh moral codes, shifting loyalties, you know, the works. And the mission itself, it's got these huge stakes, but it's also incredibly personal. It's basically twofold. Save this knight, Lisette, whose soul is, well, literally hanging in the balance. And at the same time, stop this entity, Qualoth Dahl, from basically taking over everything.
Okay, so the clock's ticking. Odds are terrible. Classic stuff.
What?
We need to start at the beginning, though. Let's unpack this. What's the absolute first thing we need to grasp here? Like, what makes this quest even seem possible?
Right. Well, the key thing, the foundation, really, is that Lisette has actually died before.
Yeah.
Yeah, years ago, she had what the sources call a first death. And this Bishop Pelagi, he managed to bring her back. He used something called divine magic, which apparently only these clerics of Idea have really mastered.
So resurrection isn't just pulled out of thin air, it's established lore.
Exactly. There's precedent. The challenge is doing it again, especially since, well, Bishop Pelagi isn't exactly available anymore.
Right. Which brings us neatly to the villain, because Pelagi is now the vessel for Qualoth Dahl. And this Qualoth isn't just some big bad monster. The sources label him an Immasus. What does that mean exactly? A superior cosmic force.
Yeah, think bigger than just a demon king. Qualoth's goal isn't merely conquest, like taking over land. It's described as seeking dominance. He wants to remake the world, Adia, into a, quote, paradise for his demon kin.
Paradise for demons.
Lovely.
Or, possibly even worse, a doorway to Moreau, which sounds like opening up a portal to some other hellish dimension. So we're talking total control, spiritual and physical.
Yeah, it's big.
And he's got an army to help him achieve this, these mechanical constructs. The Locum Varnarium, what are these things? They sound terrifying.
They are. Originally, they were Pelagi's invention. Maybe for labor, defense, it's not entirely clear. But Qualoth has weaponized them.
So repurposed tech.
Exactly. Think relentless clockwork soldiers, silent metallic shells just moving with cold purpose. The text calls them metal thralls for butchers. And crucially, they're mindless. No emotion. You can't reason with them. You can't scare them.
Which makes fighting them a nightmare, I imagine.
Completely. And here's where Qualoth gets really clever, showing that Immasus intelligence. He doesn't just rely on this brute force. He uses psychological warfare, fear, and specifically absorbing knowledge.
Ah, so he knows things he shouldn't.
He knows personal things. Like with King Alain, the sources say Qualoth knew the king's deepest fear was his own inability to protect his people.
Wow, that's targeted.
It's incredibly targeted. He weaponizes intimate knowledge, presumably gained from possessing Pelagi, who knew these leaders. It means anyone trying to fight back has to confront their own inner demons first, literally and figuratively.
So how do you fight that? Knowing he might know your worst fear, well, you start with someone desperate. Which brings us to Ginevra. She's an assassin, right? Leading the resurrection mission.
Yes, and she's defined by this incredibly rigid Nevaeh code.
Which says?
Basically, a sanction is a sanction. One dies when they need to die. It's all about detachment, professionalism, no messy emotions.
And trying to resurrect her friend Lisette is not that.
Not even close. It's a complete violation of her training, her identity, everything.
And her companion, Vizine. He points this out.
He does. He tells her straight up that her fierce loyalty to Lisette proves that you are not immutable. It's a huge character moment. The implication is that maybe the only way to fight Qualoth is to actually break your own codes, embrace that humanity.
Interesting. So if Qualoth attacks the kingdom psychology,
the heroes have to strengthen theirs by embracing the very things, loyalty, friendship, their codes told them to suppress. It's a neat parallel.
Okay, so while Ginevra is fighting the external battle, Lisette is fighting an internal one. She's trapped in this place called the Soul Vessel. What is that? Is it just like a waiting room?
Not quite. It's described as a transitionary limbo, but survival there isn't passive. It requires this intense, painful mental effort. There's a fire spirit, Wea, acting as a guide.
Wea, a fire spirit. Okay.
Yeah. And Wea tells Lisette she has to focus on life. But the way to do that is by recalling traumatic, buried memories.
Oof. So resurrection isn't just magic words. It's psychological work.
Exactly. It's an internal confrontation. And the trauma she has to face is pretty devastating. It links back to something called the Red War.
What happened?
She witnessed a massacre, an Emon village. And worse, she saw a young boy die, Celius, someone she had actually saved earlier. That's her dark secret, the thing she buried.
And the soul vessel is forcing her to confront it.
Right. It demands she stops running from that guilt, that powerlessness. Her coming back literally depends on facing that agony. It connects her personal journey right back into the world's political history, too.
Which is really smart writing. Meanwhile, back in the real world, Ginevra is getting a hard lesson in fighting Qualis' army. She gets into the stronghold.
And finds rows and rows of these locum constructs just standing there. And the nightmare scenario hits immediately. They do not bleed.
Right. How do you fight something like that?
Well, standard tactics are useless. Can't wound them. They don't tire. They don't feel pain. You can't assassinate them in the usual way. You basically have to physically dismantle them piece by piece. It's incredibly difficult and resource intensive.
And just when you think things can't get worse, the problem starts
spreading.
A healer joins them, Debro.
Yes, Debro. And he brings news about something called the Lotus Gem. Apparently, this was Koloth's prison before he possessed Pelleggi.
And now it's unshielded.
Right. And it's radiating corruption, like magical fallout. Debro reports seeing unusually aggressive, corrupted animals attacking settlements.
So the threat isn't just the army, it's the land itself turning hostile.
Exactly. The whole natural order is breaking down. It makes the threat suddenly feel much bigger, much more pervasive, and unpredictable.
Okay, this is clearly too big for a small group. They need help. Alliances. But the first attempt, with the established human powers, it goes badly, doesn't it?
Oh, spectacularly badly. The leaders of the Verdant Accord, that's the Human Alliance, they try a big attack on Sarlacc, Qualoth's stronghold. Utterly repelled. Crushed. And Qualoth's reaction is just pure contempt. He sends them a gift.
Let me guess, not flowers.
Not exactly. It's a captured locum construct, which immediately activates and attacks Jezzar Yannick's own soldiers.
Wow. He's just playing with them, rubbing their noses in it.
Completely, showing them how powerless they are. So this forces Ginevra's hand. She realizes the humans won't cut it. She has to turn to the Emon, her father's people, the ones connected to Lisette's trauma.
This sounds complicated.
It is, because she's mixed heritage, seen as an outsider. To even get an audience, she has to prove herself in a pretty extreme way. She and Vizin fly to the Emberlands.
The dragon.
Yes. And Ginevra actually tells Vizin to breathe fire on her.
What?
To activate a latent ability. It's called iron skin, a kind of magical, leathery armor that lets her withstand intense heat. It's a power only the revered former Amon chief, Trachis, supposedly possessed.
So is she trying to prove her Amon connection through fire? Does it work? Does she get the iron skin?
She does. The ability manifests. She endures the fire. She proves her power, her connection.
Okay, so surely they help her now.
Nope. She wins the power trial, but loses the political battle. Loku, the current Amon leader, flat out refuses.
Why? After all that?
History. Trauma. He brings up the Red War, the very thing haunting Lisette, and the killing of their chief, Trachis. Old wounds, deep betrayals by humans, and he condemns Ginevra personally. He calls her a quadjuess.
Which means?
Abomination, because of her mixed blood. So, she risked everything, literally walked through fire, and gets rejected because of prejudice and this cycle of anger.
That's devastating. They go back empty-handed.
Completely empty-handed. It's a real low point. It shows that personal sacrifice, even proving your lineage, sometimes isn't enough to break through generations of distrust.
Well, but what now? If the humans failed and the Emon refused?
Well, sometimes help comes from unexpected places. A couple of new allies show up, guided by Wea, that fire spirit from the soul vessel. There's Treya, another assassin, but from a different group, the Morlassa. And Vrago, a healer, a LeMay.
Okay, a smaller, more specialized team.
Exactly. And Treya just immediately commits. No politics, no debate. She says, my blade and those of my warriors will aid you. It shifts the dynamic. Maybe the answer isn't grand alliances, but this small, focused group built on immediate, radical trust.
Okay, so they have a new team dynamic. They need a plan. How do they get back into the stronghold now?
Tactical intel comes through. Sergeant Gaiska, one of the human soldiers who presumably survived the failed attack, contacts them. He uses Rui's magic, another team member, a sorcerer, presumably with a scrying bowl.
Old school magic communication. Cool. What does Gaiska tell them?
Two crucial things. One, a secret way in, the catacombs beneath the citadel. Two, a potential win condition. neutralize the controllers for the locum army who were inside the facility, take out the operators, the army stops.
Right, that makes sense. Cut off the head. So infiltration time again.
Yep. They get help from Denial, who's described as the locum engineer, maybe the original one, or someone who understands them. They use the catacombs. They make it to the bishop's office. This is where the resurrection reagents are supposed to be hidden.
They've cracked.
Annan. The plan falls apart utterly. They find the hidden compartment, the satchel, and it's full of ashes, cooking powder, and ground-up stone.
Oh no, he knew.
Qualith knew. All that stuff about absorbing Pelagie's knowledge. This is the payoff. He didn't just know their fears, he knew their exact plan. The psychological warfare wins this round.
So Ginevra confronts him directly.
She does, and Qualith, well, he changes. He literally sheds Bishop Pelagie's body.
Oh.
Reveals his true form, described as serpent-like, terrifying, and he basically boasts that being free of the human host has made him whole again, stronger.
Great. Just great. So he loses Pelagie's intel, maybe, but gains raw power.
Seems like it. It confirms the threat level is just off the charts now, right at the climax.
Okay, it looks hopeless. The plan failed. Qualith is unbound. But wait, didn't the Amlan refuse to help?
They did. But remember Wea, the fire spirit, she makes another appearance. This time, to Loku, the Amon looter.
What does she do?
She reveals the missing pieces of the puzzle. Two key truths Loku didn't know. First, Ginevra isn't just some random half-breed. She's the daughter of the revered Chief Dracus.
The one whose power she manifested.
Exactly. And second, remember Celeus, the boy Lisette saved, whose death haunted her in the soul vessel.
Yeah.
Celeus was Trachis' son. Lisette's forgotten act of compassion during that horrific massacre, the very thing she had to confront to survive, was saving the son of the leader whose people now held the key.
Wow, that changes everything.
It shatters Loki's prejudice. That single act of kindness, buried by war and trauma, bridges the gap. The political refusal just dissolves in the face of that personal truth. Another character, Zek, the Earthmaster, helps Wea open a Kaveil.
A Kaveil?
A magical gateway. Huge one. Big enough to ferry the entire Amon army directly into the Sarlacc courtyard.
The cavalry arrives. Just when all seemed lost.
Precisely. The alliance forged not by politics, but by revealed truth and old compassion. So now the final battle erupts. It's chaos. Vezin, the dragon, flies up and takes out Selak, apparently a dragon hunter driven by revenge. One personal score settled.
Okay, one down. But
Qualith counters immediately. He pulls out some new glowing device, takes direct control of the locum army himself. So much for targeting the human controllers.
So the backup plan is gone too.
Gone. Then he casts some massive crippling spell on the arriving Amon army. Meanwhile, Bishop Pelagie, the original body, is just left, trembling, naked, separated from Qualith, a victim.
And Ginevra.
She's fueled by this Amon rage. Maybe her heritage finally fully awakening, and she just attacks Qualith's serpent form. Frenzied.
Okay, this is it. And how do the sources leave us?
On the most intense cliffhanger, Ginevra is about to be struck down by one of those mindless locum. Just done for. But a soldier, an Amon soldier, presumably lips in front and takes the blow instead.
No.
But then another figure appears. A second knight, gleaming armor. A voice of calm, commanding resonance, and the final words recorded are, "Back in the fight, Crusader, we're not done yet."
Wait, calm, commanding resonance, gleaming armor. That has to be Lisette, right? She made it back.
That's the strong implication. Her journey through the soul vessel, confronting Celeus's death, it worked. She returned right at the critical moment, saving Ginevra.
Wow. Okay, what an incredible rush of information. So much going on.
It really is. And when you synthesize it all, what really stands out is the true cost. It wasn't just battles and magic. It was personal. Every single major player, you know? Ginevra battling her code, Loku overcoming generations of hate, Lisette facing her deepest trauma. They all had to confront their core fears and prejudices just to even get to this point.
Yeah, it wasn't one single hero or magic sword. It was the combination. The synthesis, wasn't it? Nevenese assassins, a dragon, a sorcerer, this healer, the human soldiers who didn't give up, and finally the Amon warriors. All these different forces had to come together.
Absolutely. And the thing that finally united them, especially the Amon, wasn't strategy or power, but that radical trust built on revealed truth and empathy.
The solution wasn't an item, it was trust.
Exactly. And you see those lines blurring constantly, right? Predator and protector, ally and enemy. It all got messy, driven purely by the urgency to survive. And now, with Lisette potentially back, well, the original mission is finally achieved, even as the bigger war kicks off.
So we have to leave it there, right on that edge. But it leaves you thinking. There's an inscription mentioned in the sources from Bishop Pelagi. Funnily enough, it asks, what can we know of destiny?
Hmm.
When you're facing something truly overwhelming, truly evil like Qualat Dall, is destiny just something written, something you accept? Or is it something you actually have to fight for yourself, maybe through friendship and confronting those hard truths, and ultimately define on your own terms?